So much has happened in the UK since we last spoke with you, Ian. I've been following your emotional sort of ups and downs via your tweets. How are you feeling?
I wasn't aware that I had any emotional ups during the period in which I've last spoken to you. It's been pretty much a remorseless trip downwards. I mean, everyone's still sort of in a state of sort of confounded despair, really. It was quite odd, you know, sort of speaking to anyone that's sort of on the liberal end of the spectrum, anyone that sort of was quite internationally minded, anyone even that's a sort of centrist, really. Or just those sort of old-fashioned conservatives who had ideas of around sort of stability, you know, and tradition maybe, and just doing things slowly and maybe not relentlessly lying to the public. Most of that was just shown to be sort of old hat, really. And, you know, this politician, Boris Johnson, who has come on, who sort of lies really remorselessly, doesn't seem to have any convictions beyond the fact that he should advance further in his political career, was given a huge reward by the British public, you know, political reward, the likes of which we haven't seen, you know, since Tony Blair. And coming back from that sort of emotionally and psychologically and in terms of your convictions has been quite a difficult process. You know, Christmas for most sort of lefty liberal Brits was not the best festive season we've ever had.
Have you got a bottle of Bolly on ice for the 31st of Jan?
No, I mean, that's another one, really. I mean, the debate over what's going on the 31st of January, which is when Britain sort of officially leaves the EU, is just, I mean, it is so mind-numbingly imbecilic that you actually feel your brain start to deteriorate as you read about it. I mean, for most Remainers, you know, basically just said, look, I'm just going to stay at home, you know, inject whiskey directly into my eyeballs. But of course, the Brexiter point of view is far more sort of triumphalistic. There's been this campaign to try and raise, I think it was £500,000 for Big Ben to ring. Big Ben is currently being refurbished, so it was unable to do so otherwise. And that's part of this sort of campaign that you get on the Brexit side of trying to find these sort of totemic aspects of national culture. Another one is coinage. They always want Brexit coins. Another one is stamps. They're desperate to have some Brexit stamps. Really to try and act as if instead of, I know it's extraordinary. I mean, the infantilism of the debate is simply beyond comprehension, but it's simply to try and demonstrate, to try and stamp this idea that what is ultimately a very divisive tribal debate is actually the will of the people. In other words, trying to sort of eradicate from the debate, sort of liberals and centrists and any internationalists from any sort of meaningful role in the country, really from existence itself. And yet simultaneously, that narrative comes across with a continued narrative of there's a Remain conspiracy trying to undermine Brexit. Even now that they have won completely, I mean, they have absolute and total victory, that is still there. So when the bells were not going to ring because Commons authorities said that actually, well, we can't do that according to the rules, the Daily Express said that it was a Remainer plot within Parliament. So even though these two things are mutually contradictory, the two narratives run at the same time.
There's one thing which I find absolutely fascinating, and that's some sort of hint that whilst Big Ben mightn't be tolling, the Lords might be moving.
Yeah, the Lords are giving it a go. Oh, the poor old dears. I mean, so the Lords are giving it a go. They've had, I think, four rebellions last night on parts of the Brexit legislation, which implements the deal that Boris Johnson struck with the EU. And they're I'd say, you know, people give the Lords a lot of criticism, and for good reason, because it is an incredibly shambolic and undemocratic second chamber to have. But over and over again, it does stand up on pretty good principles in this sort of stuff. So one of them was a Dubs Amendment, which is essentially on the rights of refugee children. Another one, for instance, was European citizens saying, basically, look, all of the status that you're giving us on immigration, which is flawed in a variety of ways, is online. You haven't given us any document to prove our status. And yet landlords will ask for this stuff because of the policies, the anti-immigration policies that the government itself has enacted. So can we please have a physical document that we can show people that proves our status? Again, the Lords rebelled on that, said they really, really should have it and the government should stop resisting the demands of European migrants in the UK. That's all going to come back to the Commons today and they will all be defeated. I mean, it won't add up to anything because Boris Johnson now has a huge majority. He can do whatever he wants. These are young Tory MPs. You know, they've just come into Parliament. They're not particularly rebellious. And even if they were rebellious, you'd need huge numbers. So good on the Lords. I mean, they're doing their best, but ultimately it'll just get knocked down in the Commons.
I was, in fact, referring to a hint that they may be relocating the Lords to York or Birmingham.
Oh, right. No, I got the wrong end of the Lord's story. Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of ideas of moving it up to York or Birmingham. I mean, this is, essentially what has happened here is that Boris Johnson has won his majority on the back of Labour voters, predominantly in the Midlands and the North. It's sort of what was formerly called the Labour red wall of sort of safe Labour seats. They've always voted Labour. Now politics has turned from the economic, from the socioeconomic into the culture war, and they've lent their votes to Boris Johnson. And he, someone who has had no interest in these voters at any point in his life and is pursuing an economic project through Brexit that will actually actively damage their material conditions, now has to demonstrate that he actually cares about them. And mostly, it seems that the ideas the government has are mostly going to be fundamentally symbolic. And the Lords idea is part of that. You know, you take the Lords chamber, you'd build something new somewhere like York. York is a very sort of pleasant old part of sort of Northern England. And that would try and show, you know, that you're reflecting the voices. Of course, it is intensely superficial because I think there's something like sort of 26 peers in this huge second chamber of hundreds and hundreds of people who actually come from that local area. But nevertheless, it would have some of that impact to try and demonstrate that they're catering to their new voters.
I talked about your tweets, the ups and downs, and okay, I concede that there are more downs than ups. One of your downs involved Jess Phillips. Now, Jeremy Corbyn's defeat, I know he doesn't get kicked out until April, but you bemoaned the fact that Jess Phillips has dropped out. Tell me why.
Yeah, she's a really interesting candidate. She's sort of extremely outspoken, says it as it is, sort of Brummy, young woman, not a Blairite. She left the Labour Party over the Iraq War, solid left-wing credentials. First time I came across her was when she was basically fighting her way to get into an immigration detention centre to see what was going on there against the wishes of the authorities there and the government. But also not a Corbynite. And she's been saying for the last sort of 5 years, you know, if you keep on doing it, you know, you are completely haphazard, you're completely incompetent, you haven't dealt with anti-Semitism, you have no position on Brexit, and, you know, you're essentially, your politics are this sort of fossilised view of 1970s British Trotskyism. And that typically doesn't tend to go over very well with the public. She was proved demonstrably correct on all of these issues. And her punishment for that is to have a leadership bid that has already fizzled out because Labour members are so uninterested in hearing someone come up with a genuinely accurate appraisal of what has just happened, of the extent to which their party has just failed, despite the fact that, you know, it is clear to even a child the extent to which, you know, she was shown to be correct. So I think that's quite sad. But there's also something more profound than that, which is ultimately, you know, the most misleading politician this country has ever seen just got given a huge mandate at the ballot box. Now, Jess Phillips, for whatever her faults might be, and I don't think there are that many, is relentlessly truthful in the manner in which she speaks. I mean, she's truthful about her own career prospects, what she's trying to achieve. She was trying to do something a bit different and she was punished for it. So you have to step back from that and just go, clearly, when this country says we think all politicians are liars, we don't trust them, they don't mean it, because by virtue of the behaviour that people exhibit on both right and left, that simply cannot be the case.
We've only got a few more minutes together, and so I want you to tell me about the bookie's favourite, Sir Keir Starmer.
Interesting bloke. I mean, there are problems there. I mean, the first one is that he is a sort of, he is fundamentally a North London Liberal. And I say that as a North London Liberal. I'm one of his constituents, actually. And that is not necessarily the most fashionable thing right now. It's not necessarily what you need to win back those Labour voters that have gone Tory. He also has this sort of slightly petrified look around the eyes, as if a sort of, you know, as if he's just been caught in headlights. So he doesn't necessarily.
But the thing I love about him, he's worked on legal battles to get rid of the death penalty in Africa and the Caribbean.
That's correct. He was former head of he was former director of public prosecutions, extremely intelligent, very good at the kind of really sort of savage trench warfare of line by line attacks in Parliament, learned from being a lawyer. My hunch is he probably will win. I think he will probably make absolute mincemeat of Boris Johnson for 4 years in Parliament, and then it will go to the country, and in an election campaign, Boris Johnson will beat him.
So what will Boris do to justify his incumbency at number 10?
Well, so far, very little. Trying to spot him is like trying to spot the Loch Ness Monster. He's adopted this new tactic, which is essentially just not to come out in public. He has to go in every week for Prime Minister's questions with Jeremy Corbyn, which actually starts shortly. But that's about it. I mean, you know, even when we were having major international incidents over Iran, you know, which Britain was involved in some capacity, Boris Johnson was simply nowhere to be seen. So you don't see much from him. The manifesto they published during the general election had essentially no policies in it, apart from the phrase, get Brexit done, which was written over and over and over again in it, as if they were trying to reenact that scene from The Shining. And so there really isn't much that's sort of going on. I mean, we've got a budget in March, but essentially, you know, a mandate has just been given to a party which seems to have no particular interest in governing beyond leaving the EU. Of course, the thing that we don't talk about is the deal you have to do with the EU for your future trading arrangements is actually harder than the divorce agreement with it just destroyed our politics for the last 4 years. So that on its own will be taking up all of their time and attention. But my sense is the public just don't want to hear about that anymore.
So as you know, and this is, we've only got 2 minutes now, but as you know, we share Her Majesty. She's our queen too. Mm. What's your feeling about the kerfuffle regarding the princeling?
I have a sort of very boring, typically sort of, you know, pinko, wishy-washy liberal view of this, which was that she was rather a helpful presence in the royal regime, really. I mean, when Meghan Markle came over, I mean, one of the things she did as Duchess was to go over to Grenfell Tower, where there was a kitchen where lots of the sort of immigrant communities around the tower, in which several people died because of very shoddy cladding put up and a fire that took place. And she went and she cooked and she lent her name to a cookbook that they put together and they raised funds. And she seemed genuinely very happy to be around the diversity of London, which was obviously something new for the royal family and felt fresh and it felt positive. I felt similarly with her comments on gender, which seemed very useful. And of course, with her identity itself. It seemed modern, and it seemed like this was the royal family speaking a language that was fundamentally of a more modern Britain, a more modern London. So to see them now have to back out, and to see it happen, I mean, I don't know what the debate's like over there, but the debate here is absolutely putrid with, you know, just beneath the sort of dermal skin, you can quite clearly see the sneering sort of racism and classism and anti-Americanism of the sort of right-wing commentariat. And to see it happen like this, I have to say, is quite a dispiriting experience, even if probably for them personally, it'll be very pleasant to get away from all this.
I understand Boris has met with them.
Yeah, I mean, I have to give full credit to Prince Harry. Oh, sorry, he's not Prince Harry anymore. Whatever it is that he's supposed to be called now, Celebrity Harry. He looks so profoundly unimpressed with Boris Johnson as he met him the other day that he just thought, well, maybe I'm projecting, but I suspect that you're enjoying that conversation as little as I would if I was in your place.
So, you and I face another year together. It's going to be fun. Well, I hope there will be moments of light relief. But it's great to have you back, and thanks, Ian.